So I got three things I think you should know about on this day, right? Message sent, message received. The Shanghai summit's images have caused President Trump to want to have a sit down with who, where? I'm going to tell you.
So Putin's putting down a big old pipeline to China. Russia and China are growing closer. Someone might have to bomb that pipeline like Nord Stream.
Yep, he just said that. I mean, what the hell, right? I mean, that's a mainstream media talking head in America pushing the CIA and Trump to blow up another Russian pipeline. If you're thinking WTF, so am I. And in America, it seems everybody these days is talking about an interview with a U.S. congressman that makes this U.S. congressman look so horrible, like such a disgusting person. And now he's going to get the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. I want to begin today with a series of thoughts and conversations that I've been having lately since returning from the coverage of the Shanghai Cooperative Summit in China. So after watching what happened there and the reaction to it, I've come to the conclusion that the United States under Donald Trump is self-isolating. I said so recently. And my comments have gotten a lot of pickup all over the world by media, especially in places like India, where I've suddenly been doing a series of interviews, including this one that I just did over the weekend with India Today.
Because of the self-isolation, because of the way the United States, through the Biden years and now through the Trump years, has kicked in the teeth the Russians and now the Indians and obviously the Chinese with the tariffs, those countries are saying, you know what? On Aeroflot Airlines, we used to play American movies. No more. I was like angry because as an American citizen, I wanted to watch an American movie. There was not a lot of American movies. There was not a lot of anything on the menu that was American. You know, you go to stores and you're not seeing American products.
Right.
There's this thing happening in the world. Sure, you and I are paid to figure it out from a large geopolitical macro level, how countries behave. But it goes beyond countries. It goes to culture, and it goes to the fact that people in these parts of the world are now going to look to each other.
Yeah, if you don't look at them, if you don't treat them well, they're going to look somewhere else, which is what they're doing. Somebody in Washington must have been listening to what I was saying during that interview, because now we're learning that Mr. Trump is planning to meet with Chinese leader Xi. The president, according to an intentional White House leak to CNN, is planning to travel to South Korea in October for the Asia-Pacific Cooperative Summit. In fact, there's even a suggestion that Mr. Trump could meet with North Korea's Kim Jong-un as well. Now, here's where this is such a flip-flop, right? Here's where it gets almost like confusing and hard to understand. First, Mr. Trump says this. He says, looks like we've lost India and Russia to deepest, darkest China. And Putin and Kim are conspiring against us. Now, he wants to sit down and have a meeting. Right? What gives? Actually, the reasons are obvious. And very much based on something that Mr. Trump, as a marketing guy, is very susceptible to. You know what it is? Optics. Optics like these. It's hard not to look at that kind of stuff and be affected, right? It's like a different world out there. Here's some of the other optics that no doubt got Mr. Trump's undivided attention. You want to see what a unified opposition looks like? You want to see what a unified opposition looks like? After you've threatened and sanctioned and tariffed and insulted every member of that group that's now unifying? This is what it looks like. Take a look at this. Take a look at this. See, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, far from it. But even I can figure out that as Mr. Trump was watching these these pictures, these images, this impressive collection of world leaders who otherwise would not have come together were it not for a common complaint about the West, he has to be thinking or saying to himself, uh-oh. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he's thinking that, or even thinking that maybe he's betting on the wrong team, betting on the wrong horse, right? I mean, look, let me put it this way. Continuing to align himself for the United States with nations that are losers, losers economically. I mean, measurably speaking, losers economically, militarily, and politically, like MERS, you know? Look at the leaders of these countries, MERS, Macron, Zelensky, Starmer, and others. Aligning yourself with them is like trying to run a marathon while carrying a 20-pound bag of manure over your shoulder, right? You're not going to win. You're not going to win, especially when your opponents are lean and mean and fast and furious. And here's the thing. I think Trump gets that. I think he gets that. I think instinctually he's pretty good. But how exactly he can change course, or whether he'll even be allowed to change course, see, that's another matter entirely. When I said that, by the way, whether he's going to be allowed, keyword allowed, to change course, it's because I need you to understand something. I need you to understand, as an American, I want you to understand something about my country, okay? The pressure that is put on politicians, on elected officials, but especially presidents, by neocons and their agents in the media, it's tremendous. The idiocy, the greed, the audacity of these people is almost unfathomable. They will stop at nothing to convince Mr. Trump, as they have with all the presidents before him, except JFK, that he has to hate and attack Russia and China, and I guess now India. Look at what this talking head that I'm about to show you, who, by the way, is not a journalist, but appears on Fox News, Trump's favorite mainstream media channel. Look what this guy said over the weekend.
Vlad lost his customers in Europe. Now America is selling energy to the French and Germans. So Putin's putting down a big old pipeline to China. It's supposed to be finished next decade and supply 15% of China's energy. Russia and China are growing closer. Someone might have to bomb that pipeline like Nord Stream. Trump's not thrilled with Pooty Poot.
Did he just say that? Someone's going to have to bomb that pipeline. This guy's doing a news show, and he's suggesting that? And this is a grab I just showed you. It was published by the Hindu Post. I mean, in it, this Fox News talking head, this man-child, is actually suggesting that someone should start World War III. I mean, by blowing up the Siberia 2 pipeline, so that Russia is not able to send oil and gas to China. How do you think that's going to go over, dumb? Ugh. I mean, how crazy is this? This is what we're seeing in my country by people who are supposed to be journalists. Talk about temerity. Talk about irresponsibility. And he uses air quotes. You see him do that? When referring to the Nord Stream blow up, as if to admit, yeah, we did it, or it was blown up intentionally by the CIA or MI6 or Mossad. Yeah, good for us. That's what he's doing. Now, do you think Mr. Trump got his message? Probably. Will he do as he's being told? God help us if he does. Let me tell you about Richie Torres. This guy represents all that is wrong with U.S. politics. This U.S. congressman, who describes himself as a gay Democrat, is also described as one of America's future leaders. Some think he's a savior of America and the Democratic Party. But he's been revealed as one of the worst examples of corruption in U.S. politics. He votes for wars, and then he reportedly invests in those companies, hoping to be able to make a lot of money off of them. And has, apparently. And he was caught. And he's 100% obedient, not to the United States, not to the area of New York he serves, to Israel. To Israel, right? I think at last check, he'd taken $1.6 million from him, right? Taking what is essentially legal bribes from another country. And look at this. This is what you get right now if you do a YouTube search of Richie Torres. Look at all the articles and look at all the stuff that's been humiliated. Worst interview, right? Destroyed. Yeah. Owned by Israel. All this from an interview he did on a podcast with a Jewish American comedian who tried to plead with him to stop funding Israel. Here's a clip. Watch.
I think hatred of Jewish people has exploded in this country. And I don't think it's, I think it's because it's of our support of what looks to be an absolute brutality. And I think that...
That's a justification for anti-Semitism?
Here's the thing.
You think Israeli government policy is a justification for anti-Semitism? My view is there's no justification for anti-Semitism.
I think that...
There's zero justification for anti-Semitism.
Okay, you're deflecting again.
I'm not deflecting. That's my position. It just sounds like you're justifying anti-Semitism, which making me feel like...
Are you crazy right now?
Okay.
Why would I do that? You're doing the I'm Hamas thing?
Because
It's hard for me to talk about this in public. You're being a dick. That's mean.
No. I'm not being mean. It's an emotional topic. The war began on October 7th.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
You're a dick.
Yes, when Hamas systematically murdered and made...
Okay.
Look, we're going down a rabbit hole. We fundamentally disagree.
Hamas murdered and maimed and mutilated and abducted and tortured
thousands of people. That's not television. That's a fact. That's reality. There was violence against Jews before the establishment of the state of Israel.
There's violence against Palestinians.
Do you think October 7th was justified?
No.
Okay, I'm happy you said that.
Are you listening to what I'm saying right now?
I am listening to what you're saying.
Can you believe this? This is some American politician who takes millions of dollars from Israel telling a Jewish American dude that he is an anti-Semite. That he, a Jewish guy, is an anti-Semite. Because he hates the fact that somebody's killing babies. What the hell, right? What the hell? Torres has come off and is being described by hundreds of thousands of people who've been watching this as a horrible person, a politician without a soul, a guy just giving patented political answers with no emotion. And of course, he's being described as you saw in some of those clips we showed you, Israel's lackey. And really, to have a Jewish American interviewer pleading with him to stop because of the damage he's doing to Jews everywhere, it seemed to make this even more poignant. Why? Because Torres seemed both uncaring and, look, uninterested.
If you remove Hamas...
You don't actually think that.
I told you what I believe. Don't tell me what I believe. I've told you what I believe.
Why would you believe that?
Because there are people who see the world differently. I know it's a shock to you, but there are people who see the world differently from you.
But why do you...
I know that's a shock to you.
So much to say. Look at this. You're looking at an estimated 40,000 people taking to the streets of Moscow this weekend. I know a lot of people in the West are thinking, good, are they protesting against Putin or the government or something like that? Nope, sorry, wrong. Just the opposite, in fact. It's a Christian march, a Christian march. Or actually more a show of strength of Christians in this part of the world. The procession was led by leaders and followers of the Russian Orthodox Church as they celebrated and honored the saints of Moscow. The event marks the revival of a tradition that's almost 100 years old. It was discontinued by the Russian Revolution back in 1917. But it also signals something else, something that's happening in Russia that makes it very different from what's happening in Western countries, the revival of Christianity. While in the U.S. and Europe, Christianity is kind of waning in terms of attendance, pride. In Russia, it seems to be just the opposite. And one of the big motivators for many of these people, by the way, for many of these Christian Russians, is the way the Russian Orthodox worshipers are being treated in Ukraine. More on that. All right. There's a story in a part of the world where, once again, the United States is, well, threatening war. And this time, the country is pushing back. And the whole world seems to be paying attention to it. We're talking about Venezuela. We're talking about warships and troops and, uh-oh, is this one of those here we go again moments? We're going to be talking about that. My guest is in Venezuela. He's going to be joining us to explain what's happening and whether a lot of what the United States is boasting about or saying, these claims are true or not true. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. So, hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is a Sanchez Effect. Let's give the effect right now to the story that's developing between the United States and Venezuela. Looks like the United States is on the brink of going to war, threatening war, wanting to go to war with Venezuela. What has Venezuela done that is so horrible that it should consider now being bombed by the United States of America? Well, I guess it has to do with drugs. Sounds like a story that's been told before. Remember Panama, right? Remember Panama? Same situation. Let's talk about this because there really is a lot to talk about with Diego Sequeira. He's the author and journalist at Mission Verdad, which means truth mission. Diego, ¿qué pasó?
Saludo. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Rick.
Igualmente, mi amigo. Many thanks to you for joining us. This story is getting crazier by the day. And to the average person watching us from around the world, and there are millions and millions of people who are watching us around the world right now, they're probably trying to figure out what the hell this is all about. So I'll tell you what, let me start with this. I'm going to show you, in case you guys haven't seen this, Diego's going to explain this to us in a minute, but this looks like a tiny fishing boat. Smaller than my boat that I go fishing off the coast of Miami, getting blown up by the United States as if it was some kind of warship. And then the United States brags about it, like, you know, they just took down a Chinese destroyer or something. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Here, keep watching this. And Diego, please, as we're watching these pictures, describe to people what this is.
Well, this is what the U.S. says, which is not necessarily what it actually is. There's no actual evidence or proof of when, how, whom this happened. But of course, this is from last week. I think it was from Wednesday last week. This was first attached to a tweet by Marco Rubio, and then another one by Trump himself, which also posted some sort of Magnum PI-esque kind of message. Pretty vintage-like, I mean, beware and whatnot. It's supposed to be a small boat carrying drugs into the United States that it killed, according to what they said, 11 people.
Yeah.
Belonging, according to them, of course, to El Tren de Aragua. Mm-hmm. As you might be aware of already, El Tren de Aragua has been designated a narco-terrorist organization, same with El Cartel de los Soles, which we'll talk soon enough about it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Basically, they're saying that we just caught this boat, which is not even a big boat, not even a speedboat, heading for the U.S., heading straight to de facto naval blockade into the U.S., carrying drugs with 11 people. Where's the space for the drug in that case? And basically they destroy it, and that's the reason why they do it. That's what the rationale is behind what they said. Although, for example, our government even has to ask the question, is this AI? Personally, I don't know. I wouldn't think about that one, but it could be footage from anywhere, anytime. I mean, it could be a Somali pirate for that matter, if that's the case. But there's also not enough proof from our side. some social media said this is from some town in eastern Venezuela called San Juan de Unare, which is famous for for this kind of problems. I mean, a lot of contraband smuggling going on very close to Trinidad and Tobago, so on. But there is no actual evidence yet of what this is. Still, I mean, there's no
proof. But let's suppose it was. But let's suppose it was what it is. Let's suppose it's some guy with about this much of drugs, because that's about how much you can get on a boat like that, right? Last time I checked, I just checked the numbers. Last check, there are 48 million Americans who have a substance use disorder. In other words, who are affected by drugs. America has a huge drug problem, a huge drug problem. We Americans consume more drugs than anybody in the world. We've got a serious problem that the government should be trying to combat. And you're not going to combat it by shooting a 12-foot boat. And by the way, last time I checked, most of the drugs coming into the United States are not in any way coming in from Venezuela. In fact, the number of drugs coming in from Venezuela is minute compared to where else they come from. And it's legitimate to attack the problem and to go after people smuggling drugs into the United States. But to have a problem this big and attack the source that's this big seems almost dumb, stupid, or deceitful. You choose, Diego.
Yeah, I would choose all of them at the same time, to be honest. And why didn't ensue any kind of interdiction that would prove anything of their own accusations against Venezuela? As they usually is the case when drug procedures are going on, you should check. There's a tweet by Gustavo Petro, the Colombian president, because this, as far as true, he basically said, if this is true, this is a major crime, which it is. I mean, if you're going to attack the source, like you just said, Rick, you're not going to just, this will be like the weakest link throughout the whole chain. And like you, also you said, from Venezuela, it's around 5% of the drugs, which is, that go not only to the U.S., but outside other places. And drugs that comes from Colombia. Because, Colombian cartels are very interested, actually, in using Venezuela as a platform to take out drugs into the Atlantic or other places of the U.S., but that's not the case. If you go and check any adult report, and I'm talking about the U.N. and others, and even the DEA sources, they're not going to, there's no proof that the highest percentage of these drugs comes from Venezuela. They come from Colombia and Ecuador. Yeah. They go through the Pacific, and they go also through land corridors through Central America. So precisely this, at this point, it is a psyop, regardless.
So let me think of a country that may have also been involved in running drugs and actually used CIA planes. One of them was captained by a guy named Hassan Fuss, who I interviewed in Miami during the 1980s in places like Honduras and El Salvador and Nicaragua. You know who that was? The United States of America was running drugs through those countries, guilty of the very thing we're saying now. This guy you're talking to right now, right? Me, Rick Sanchez. I went into a prison and interviewed a guy named Manuel Noriega. And I asked President Noriega, he was in full uniform, creepy experience for me to go all the way down into this place in this federal prison. And I asked Mr. Noriega, did you work for the CIA? And he said, yes, I worked for the CIA before they appointed me president. I said, who did you work for? He said, George Bush. I mean, it's almost like history repeats itself. In fact, here, let me play this for you. This is Maduro, the president of Venezuela, comparing what's going on now to the famous WMD and crushing baby skulls in Kuwait story that the United States used before we invaded Iraq, which was basically a war based on a lie. Here it is.
Venezuela is not a relevant country when it comes to drug trafficking or any related matters. So this lie is as crude and false as the claim that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. It is a lie. As I say this to the American public, we may have differences in ways of thinking, in philosophy, in politics, in economics, but please don't let yourself be fed one more lie for one more fratricidal war.
So I guess the real question, Diego, is after all that, and pardon me for going off, I wasn't trying to show off my journalistic credentials. It's just that I happen to have done some stuff in my life which I think is relevant to this. Yeah, is what's really going on here? What's really going on here?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what you have to do. That's, as usual, you have to take one step back and ask the basics, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, well, first of all, if you just check out Venezuelan, U.S.-Venezuelan history from the recent U.S.-Venezuelan history from the last 20 years, you're going to find out, I don't know how many, at this point, regime change attempts, first against El Comandante Chavez and then intensifying against Nicolás Maduro, in several shapes and forms ever since 2013 onward until now. If you, like Jimmy Dore did a few days ago, he showed a clip. He just made a good contrast between what they're saying now, especially Marco Rubio, and what he said during the campaign regarding Venezuela and oil. We would have taken all that oil. Venezuela was about to collapse and whatnot. So I think that in hindsight, that basically tells it all. Now, what's the thing? I'm not sure that Trump is like 100% on board yet. And even now, I'm not bailing him out, mind you. On this misadventure. He has been playing a two-track, a dual approach to Venezuela ever since he got into office back in January. For one, he has gold cup Rick Grenell, which basically favors dialogue without being friends, without being friendly, without officially reinstating diplomatic relationships among both countries. And he actually has achieved many stuff, as in being received in Miraflores Palace and whatnot, and releasing some of the people who are in jail here, some U.S. citizens that are in jail here for several legal reasons. And but then you have the other track, which is Marco Rubio himself. And Marco Rubio, it's saying a lot of things. By the way, I think now, drunk in hubris as he is, it's probably the most dangerous man in the world, even more dangerous than Netanyahu, as we speak. And here's the thing, Marco Rubio, it's a neocon. Marco Rubio is a Southern Florida fanatic. Marco Rubio is ambitious and he's trying to go above the Secretary of State and try to get and become the next presidential candidate. And he has to deliver. But also Trump needs deliverance from this, what the actual Spiels call them, the Southern crisis. He needs to have all the Florida crises on board in Congress. So you have to give them something. And Venezuela represents each and every one of these things. So back in 2020, there was this paradigm shift between when the U.S. basically quit Guaido as their main leverage against Venezuela, and they decided William Barr's proposal. This is on Mark Esper's memoirs.
Yeah, let me back you up a little bit because our viewers might be, you're throwing out a lot of names here and stuff. So let me just kind of catch them up a little bit. Ever since Venezuela had a revolution and got rid of its oligarchical system where they just had puppets there who worked for Washington and did whatever Washington wanted them to do so that they can essentially extract as much oil as the United States needed to, ever since they changed them and a guy named Chavez took over, the United States has been trying to assassinate the leaders, including Chavez. Did so on many occasions. I still think they essentially killed Chavez, but at least I've read enough material that would suggest that. I also believe that they've entertained and actually fomented many coups in Venezuela, and that they've been trying to take out this dude here now, Maduro, as well. So all of those things have happened, including the last name that you mentioned, which is Guaido, which is some guy they picked out of nowhere and made him the new president of Venezuela. But the people of Venezuela took to the streets and said, no, you don't get to name who our president is. We're going to keep the guy we got. And all those things happened. I know they happened. I watched them. I reported on them. And now this is the latest, I guess, attempted coup?
Yes, that's the key. This is another regime change attempt. That's nothing more, nothing less. And they just are pushing what they did in 2020. I mean, the bounty on Nicolas Maduro, the $15,000 bounty in 2020 was a William Barr thing, being an attorney general. And think about William Barr and Noriega back then, by the way. Do you see the connection? And so it went kind of mute during the Biden years, and then suddenly it Biden actually raised the stake to 25,000. And just a few, like a month ago, the White House raised the stake one more time, the Treasury Department, to 50,000 for knowing where Maduro is, and giving information to lead to President Nicolás Maduro. I can give that information. He's at Mira Flores Palace, giving my 50 million bucks now. And so, yeah, but coming back to the point, it's basically that they also created this. They brought another element from their toolbox, which is another old one, which is the Cartel de los Soles, which is it's like a federal name they have been using along for a while, but intermittently. It's something that you don't see all the time. But mind you, I invite your viewers to check out, look in YouTube, and look for a 60 Minutes piece called The CIA's Cocaine. It's a 1993 report focusing on Ramon Guillén Dávila, which was the head, 1993, Rick. He was the head of the anti-drug force for the National Guard in Venezuela. And he was basically, he was indicted for smuggling cocaine into the U.S. by the DEA, but he stated clearly several times that he was working with and for the CIA. So he actually got immunity in order to, as a protected witness, in order to declare to the Florida Attorney General, in order to give information that leads to this. This also created an investigation by the DEA regarding what happened. The first 900 libers that they caught was in 1990. He fell when he was trying to basically push a ton and a half 3 years afterwards. That's the moment that the DA said, okay, this is enough. That's the moment where the Cartel del Sol actually happened. That's where the staple name comes from. It went asleep until in 2005, a Miami Herald piece quoted an unnamed high-level diplomat in Venezuela, which is, by all means, William Brownfield. So, former ambassador in Venezuela and then ambassador in Colombia, by the way.
So are you saying that the U.S. government has been involved in the same kind of drug running it's now essentially accusing Venezuela of being involved in?
Precisely. And at that moment, you have another president. You have Nicaragua. You have Bolivia in the 80s also, where there was also infighting between agencies, between the DEA and the CIA. The CIA trying to bring the drugs into U.S., the EA trying to do their work, or that's what they say. So, yeah, it's the same pattern here. And and mind you that Guillén Dávila was indicted for smuggling drugs from 87 to 1993. So that construct is the one they just rehabilitated and have been using ever since 2005. You know what else happened in 2005, Rick? Mm-mm. Venezuela stopped working with the DEA. That's the moment that the collaboration ended.
So,
kind of makes sense, right?
Let me ask you about the organization you just mentioned. Also, we hear a lot about Tren de Agua, right? Which is basically, I don't know, the water train or something. I've been reading, I've been doing a little bit of reading and research on this. It's a pretty minuscule, somewhat weak organization, and to call them a major drug collaborator or a cartel is a bit of an overstatement, isn't it?
It's overblown and it's overdone, both things. El Tren de Aragua, it was a criminal organization. It was a big criminal structure, nothing different from the globalized ones in Latin America, as in Primer Comando Capital from Brazil, or Comando Vermelho, or Las Maras. It started in jail, yes, in prison, in the Tocoron prison in the Aragua state. And this was a moment when sanctions were hitting hard and the economic crisis was hitting pretty hard. The Tocoron prison is in Aragua state. And ATREN would be the sum of several criminal cells, carros, that all together set up ATREN. That's where the name comes from.
I see.
That's the origin, right? And it there was, like I said, there was also complicity back then when it allowed it to grow a bit and also to diversify their own business portfolio, air quotes, as in they were doing kidnaps, protection racket. They got into drug smuggling afterwards.
I mean, they're bad guys. They're bad guys. I mean, there's bad guys all over the world.
Bad guys. But the difference is that these guys also made a trade out of migrant smuggling throughout, according to what they say, throughout the whole Pacific Andean line down to Chile.
Yeah.
How a criminal organization is going to go through one of the most surveilled areas in the hemisphere without being noticed? That's a question I got.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's true, you know, so yeah, I mean, El Tren de Aragua also, by the way, has been dismantled in Venezuela. Some of the cells that set it up are around still, but the Tren as a major organization was basically finished when the government intervened in the Boko Haram.
Well, that would be like saying, though, that because there's a mafia in the United States, because the Gambino organization is in New York City, then Russia or China has a right to bomb New York City because they have a criminal organization working inside the government of the United States. And by the way, that Gambino organization was at one time responsible for some of the heroin that entered into parts of Europe that I'm sure made its way to St. Petersburg or made its way to other places. In other words—
The French connections.
Yeah, exactly. I saw the movie too, right? So I guess the thing we're getting at here is as good as the Constitution of my country, the United States of America, is, right? As descriptive as it is for laying out the rights of people and understanding the rights of sovereignty, everything that is happening here goes against those principles. You can't just blow up a boat without charges because you suspect that somebody on that boat may be doing something wrong. That's what courts are for. You can't just attack a government and say no more than the government of the United States or any president of the United States is a Gambino or a mafia member because the mafia exists in his country. But these seem to be, unless I'm exaggerating here, the things that we're doing right now with these accusations. How am I wrong?
You're not wrong at all, man. We're talking about a rogue organization right now. We're talking about a government going rogue. Just check out, remember what Rubio said just a few days ago, I don't care what the UN says. There's also an exchange by Vice President Vance saying like—
Oh, hey, I have that. I got it. We could, Gene, play that for Diego. Play that soundbite when they asked the Vice President about the blowing up of this boat. Go ahead.
Killing cartel members who poison our fellow citizens is the highest and best use of our military.
Killing the citizens of another nation who are civilians without any due process is called a war crime.
I don't give a shit what you call it.
I don't give a bleep what you call it. Blowing up a boat?
Yeah, I mean, so classy, isn't it?
I mean, say that again. I'm sorry. What'd you say?
So classy.
Yeah. What a weird and almost horrible thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, and that sets the tone. That sadly sets the tone. And of course, until now, Rick, it's just we can accept for now that it's fear-mongering. Not only what the video and what it implies legally, as you perfectly said. I mean, it's a crime. It's a war crime, regardless. But you also have, there was like this, also this communique by the Pentagon that two Venezuelan aircraft were near one of these destroyers near our shores in Venezuela, and to be careful. And then you have all the recent Trump's statements.
Yeah.
I think, Rick, mind you, there's a pipeline here that we need to take into account, be it with the Tren de Aragua, be it with Venezuela in general. The baseline for El Tren de Aragua being called and being overblown like a proxy with a plausible deniability sent by the Venezuelan government was actually reported by a guy named Joseph Humeyer for the American Enterprise Institute. That's a baseline for all the legalities and technicalities and all the paperwork that came afterwards. And you have the same thing Now, I want you, there's this report by the Miami Strategic Intelligence Institute by a guy named Jesus Romero, which by his profile is an absolute spook, that basically wrote how feasible it is, the conclusion of that report is how feasible it is to basically airstrike Venezuela. And it even says that air support could be effective with an armed opposition uprising. I mean, the Libya scenario. And I have to go back a couple of weeks before the whole, this whole misadventure we're in now, when Venezuela has systematically dismantled huge terrorist plots. So if I do the math,
And here's the point, man. Here's the point. We're better than that. America's better than that. If I truly believed that Venezuela was a threat to the continent and that they were doing really horrible things and they were responsible for all the drugs that come into the United States, please, then I would say, hey, go for it. But I know this game. I've seen it before. And the reason that the United States is going after Venezuela seems, by all indications, to have something to do with the fact that Venezuela may have more oil reserves than any country in the world. And that right now, it's been courted successfully by countries like China and Russia because they haven't gone in there and abused them. Instead, they've helped them build roads and plants and initiatives, et cetera. And this is what really this seems to be about. Again, I ask, am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. And I might add to what you say one more thing. And this is a Rubio thing also, by the way, which is one of the most intellectually developed guys in the government right now. There's also an awareness of decline. And they know that part of what they have to do is part of the project is like, repatriate, you know, industry and capitals from the U.S. into the U.S., or if that doesn't work, into the hemisphere. And of course, you have also oil next door. And you also have refining circles that actually depend on Venezuelan heavy crude. You have that on southern U.S. So, but they don't want to go through a government that hasn't any problem to have working as partners, as regular, respectful, coherent diplomatic partners. No, they just want it all. And of course, this is where ideology comes from. And mind you, another thing, Rick, there has been also a clash between two visions, the one from energy markets and the one from ideological politicians. Because ever since the whole sanctions have been going on, the blockading and everything else, it has harmed the energy business above all. Yeah. That's why actually Biden reapproach or Soda reapproach for the first Democrat style, the first years of his tenure, you know? That's basically it.
That's interesting.
So we're back at the wall now, it's a hemispheric wall, and they need to control the oil.
That's interesting what you just said, and that's kind of brilliant. And I never think of it in those terms, but oftentimes it's the coming together of disparate groups wanting the same thing, but for different reasons. Because you've got your rich industrialists, energy billionaires, who will do anything to get their greedy hands on Venezuela's oil, and they're not idealistic. They don't give a crap if Venezuela's communist or Marxist or whatever the hell they want to be. They don't care. They don't care what the hell happens. They don't give a crap about the people of Venezuela. Then there's the other ones who are idealistic, and they're like into this crazy world where they think they have a right to change a government because they disagree with the form of government. And when those two factions come together, they're quite dangerous. And it's kind of the history of Latin America, as it was taught to me by my father when I was a little kid growing up, that there were forces in the United States that would just go to places like Guatemala, start a coup and a revolution, and 200,000 people would die. But in the end, the United States got to keep more private land and got to keep their businesses running in those places. And you would think that that stuff would be over, but I think we're seeing it right now happen in Venezuela. Man, that sucks. That's just wrong. Shouldn't happen. None of our business. If they want to be whatever the hell they want to be, let them be it, and let them learn from their own experiences and make their own mistakes. I don't think communism works. I think it's a stupid form of government. But if they want to give it a try and see if they can make it work, fine, fail. But you can't force people to believe what you believe, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, it's even beyond that, because Venezuela, it's not communist exactly. I mean, it's a socialist, Bolivarian socialist project.
Yeah.
Whatever that means also, if it entails social justice and fair distribution, it's important for us, very important, but also entails something far more important, and you as a Latino know perfectly, which is sovereignty, independence, and national pride.
Yes.
And our own right to tell our own story in that sense, you know? And yes, and also to make deals with whenever everyone that wants to make a deal respectfully. It's not a matter of subordination.
Yeah.
And mind you, check this out. I mean, this is part of the thing. Marco Rubio has been creating a coalition of the willing against Venezuela, which basically are declaring El Cartel de los Soles as a narco-terrorist organization. But who are the countries that are doing this? Argentina's Milei, Paraguay, which is very close to narco-state, Ecuador, which is a full-blown narco-state, República Dominicana, Dominican Republic, which is basically the Caribbean's laundromat, Trinidad and Tobago, and Guyana. Those are the coalition of the willing.
Wow. So,
I mean,
it's you just said it all. Yeah, no, you just said it all. And let me just end with this question. I guess it's the obvious one that most people would be thinking about as they're watching this. There's obviously much worse countries in the world than Venezuela, much, much worse countries in the world than Venezuela. Do you think if Venezuela didn't have the oil reserves that it had, that the United States would be engaging in this attack enterprise it seems to be displaying right now?
Well, it's hard to respond, but there are two things. First, probably we would be less attention, we would care less if there wasn't the oil and the minerals, because we have the fourth gold reserve in the world, we have the first natural gas reserve in the hemisphere, etc. But yeah, but there's another thing, I think. The example, the human historical example that Venezuela could entail here, it's also a problem. And the Venezuelan population and the Bolivarian Revolution project should be punished because of that. So you do also have like that human factor. But if this was the case, it would have gone into some low intensity conflict, Nicaragua style, you know, something like that. It would be less important and less headlines. But probably we would have been punished anyway because of the choices that we've made.
Yeah.
We also have the longest shoreline in the Caribbean basin.
See, I just came back from China. That's why I have this sore throat after being on a plane so darn long. I get a feeling that what I witnessed in China is essentially the catapulting, if you will, of the recognition that countries that do what the United States is doing right now in Venezuela is so horrible, so wrong, so much of an interference that other countries need to guard against it by coming together to make sure they don't allow those forces to make them do things they don't want to do and to respect their sovereignty in the end, which is why I think the U.S. may need to be very careful moving forward in Venezuela, because I do believe that the Chinese have invested way too much in Venezuela to simply watch somebody walk in there and take it away. And I also think that the Russians have invested, as have other countries, in Venezuela. So this could trigger a little bit of an issue, I think. And I think my country, the United States, and Mr. Rubio and others, I would advise them to tread carefully and tread lightly, especially amid what's happening with the BRICS nations and with the Shanghai Cooperative Summit most recently. That's my final word. What's yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's not only what we're against, because Venezuela has also a betting multipolarity. It's what we're for that's even a problem here. What the kind of world we want to be in the next 10, 15 years, especially facing the dangers we're facing right now. So it also has to do with that, just like you said. I mean, this is also against multipolarity. And if something bad, I mean, really bad, beyond the fear mongering happens, it will trigger a regional crisis. This won't be only a Venezuelan thing. Hmm. And of course, it will be also the extension of the Gaza paradigm.
Oh, wait. What do you mean by it'll trigger a regional crisis? That sounds like a new story to me. What do you mean it would trigger a regional crisis? Define that regional crisis.
It wouldn't stop there. They would go after Brazil afterwards. If there's a war here, that's going to triple the number of migrants and refugees. What the crisis on investment this could mean, what could happen in the Caribbean, what could happen with Colombia, who has a friendly government to Venezuela right now, what's going to happen with migration into the U.S. if everything becomes a humanitarian catastrophe in this part of the world?
This could blow up.
It could blow up, yeah. I don't know how aware.
Final thing in defense of my president. I don't think Trump wants to do this. And I don't think he will do this. I think deep down...
I agree with you.
Yeah, you do? Okay, good. Good, yeah. I think he'll push the Marco Rubio... Go ahead.
It's a Marco Rubio thing, but Trump will own it if it succeeds. That's the problem with Trump there.
Why am I not surprised to hear you say that?
What
doesn't he own if it succeeds? He even owns it if somebody else succeeded in it. Oh, my God. Diego, it's so good to talk to you. You know, hang tough, man. Same. I mean, I know this is a difficult thing, and I know you're covering it and watching it, and it affects you directly. So we're here for you. Thank you for taking time to taking us through it and sharing your wisdom with us here on the Sanchez Effect.
Muchas gracias, hermano. Thank you.
Igualmente. Muchas gracias por todo. Nos veremos en un futuro. Wow. What a fascinating conversation. What a weird story to come out of seemingly nowhere all of a sudden. The U.S. on the brink of, as the headlines say, I don't believe it's going to happen, but is the U.S. on the brink of attacking Venezuela and starting a regional conflict, as you heard Diego describe it? Well, that's it from us. Sorry about my sore throat and my forced voice. You can check out my podcast, by the way. It's called Journalistically Speaking. It's on YouTube. We're going to play a portion of this. I'm also aplenty on X, where you can see some of my latest new material recently as well. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Sanchez Effect. Glad you've been with us. Thank you for letting us in. I'll see you next time.